Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Coaches on the Run. We have a spectacular guest, Allie on the Run, who is such an amazing presence in the running world. She talks to us about her experiences as an announcer, as a podcaster, as a blogger, as a mom, and also her experiences with having Crohn's disease, which she handles with such grace and gives a lot of tips on how to deal with not so great circumstances to running and to continue on with doing what you love. So please enjoy this episode. If you are enjoying Coaches on the Run, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us and we greatly appreciate your support. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Coaches on the Run podcast.
This is Alex.
And Alyssa.
We're both full-time coaches, and we're here to answer your common and not so common trail and ultra questions.
Hi, this is Allie Feller, the host of the Allie on the Run show podcast, and this is the Coaches on the Run podcast.
Awesome. Allie, thank you so much for joining us. Both Alex and I are huge fans of your podcast and just all the work you've done in the running field. So we are super psyched to have you on today. I guess starting off, what is your background in running? How did you become a runner and become Allie on the Run?
Sure. So I was a dancer growing up. Running was in no way a part of my life, except if I was like being punished in gym class, which I was a very good kid. So I was not punished in gym class. I hid under the bleachers when we had to do the timed mile in fifth grade for the presidential physical fitness test. It was just not something I knew about. It wasn't something that I thought people would ever choose to do. It was like, it was the punishment in other sports, right? Like, in third, fourth, and fifth grade, I played basketball. And it was like, we would do, you know, drills that involved running and I hated it. And so I never thought running, I certainly never thought I would be Allie on the Run. I was a competitive dancer. That was my entire life, my entire world. Everything I did revolved around dance. And it wasn't until I went to college, continued dancing at Quinnipiac University. I was the captain of the kickline team there. And then moved to New York City to pursue my magazine publishing dreams, and dance was gone. I wasn't, you know, there's not, if you're not planning to be a professional dancer, yeah, you can take classes, you can find ways to perform, but I didn't really feel the need to do that. It was just like, okay, that chapter of my life has closed, and I found myself not having another physical outlet. And I had a roommate that I had found on Craigslist. We live together. We call ourselves a Craigslist success story because it worked out great. She's still one of my closest friends. And she was a runner. And I tell the story that I remember going into her room in our shared apartment. And she had all these, I joked that I was like, I like your necklaces. And she was like, those are half marathon medals. But I had never seen them before. I didn't know anything about running. I had never heard the term half marathon. And so she was the one who introduced me to running. She was pretty much the reason that I attempted my first run, which couldn't have been more than 3 minutes long because I was just like, didn't know what I was doing, sprinted, was gassed, and was like, that was awesome. And it grew from there. She's the one who got me to sign up for my first 4 mile race in Central Park. And that was the one. I was hooked. I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved Central Park. New York City was a great place to become a runner. And that was in 2008. So I've been at it for more than a decade now, which is crazy. Definitely never saw this future for myself.
That makes me so happy because I was a dancer too. And yay. I think my friend Solange was a dancer as well. And other than myself, because I'm really clumsy, I think dancers make the prettiest runners because they always have some grace and coordination. I somehow lost all of those skills, but most people seem to carry it over.
Don't worry. I break that mold. No one has ever called me a pretty or graceful runner. So I'm right there with you.
Oh, good. Thank you. That makes me feel better, actually. So I guess, your career and now your hobby and like your whole life kind of encompasses running. So I guess, how do you balance feeling like there's other parts of your life? And I guess what are, because I didn't realize you were a dancer and I do listen to your podcast quite a bit, but you tend to not talk about yourself nearly enough, in my opinion. So how do you juggle, I guess, your identity outside of being a runner? And I guess, what are some things that people may not realize that you do?
Yeah, I would say, to be totally honest, I don't have a lot of balance in my life right now. I've learned firsthand not to completely let running be your entire identity, because when you're injured, when you're sick, whatever it is, that's gone. And if that's all you have, it's really hard to suddenly be without that. So there are certainly other things that I enjoy doing, but I mean, since the pandemic started, I used to go to Orange Theory. That was my workout of choice for a while. And it wasn't until the pandemic hit that obviously gyms closed. And that was when I really started building up my mileage again. I had kind of stopped running longer distances. And I sort of rediscovered a whole love for it since being in New Hampshire and discovering all the trails. And that being said, there's also walking, and I made the splurge and got myself a Peloton treadmill like many others during the pandemic. And there's all kinds of other outlets in terms of actually working out. I like yoga. That being said, I wouldn't say that I have much balance in my life right now. My days are really, really, really jam-packed, which is how I like them right now. I'm in that season of my life where I feel like I have a lot of energy and I like waking up early. And so I wake up early and it's kind of like straight out of a cannon until I go to bed at night. And in those hours, I am either working, which revolves around running, talking about running and talking with runners, or I'm going out for my run myself, which is anywhere from 5 to 8 miles during the week. And I'm being a mom. I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, Annie. And so she's in school part-time. And so I'm either, you know, getting her ready and doing drop-off or pickup or taking care of her, or on the days that she's home, it's all about her. And that's it. Like right now, honestly, I don't have a lot of hobbies. I have been reading the same book for like 3 months now, because by the time I get to evening, I'm just exhausted and I do my little 10-minute meditation and I'm asleep. So there's not, I'm not a good person to ask about balance, because it's not something that is important to me right now. And that's not to say it's not ever important. It's just the season I'm in right now where I'm really prioritizing everything career or everything mom. So that was like very much dancing around your question, but that is kind of the reality right now. There's not a lot of like leisure time for me. And that's my choice. I can say I work for myself. So that is a choice that I make. If I wanted to, I could do a little less work, you know, I could figure it out, but I really, really like my work. And so I think there's that too, is that it is something that I enjoy so much that the saying is now, of course, so cliche, but like when you love it, it doesn't feel like work, and it really doesn't tend to feel like work for me. So I'm very lucky in that way.
Well, as a super new mom, that it makes me feel really good, because I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm cutting things out of my life that have less value to me. And I was like, huh, I wonder if that's going to make me kind of a boring person, that I'm not as interested in all of these extracurriculars, but I have, you know, more of a limited time. So I think what you're saying is very relatable, especially with a newborn. So I can only imagine, you know, you've had kids for, you know, a few years. And so it's been kind of an evolution, I'm sure, but I think that actually makes you really relatable. And I also think it's hilarious that you consider yoga as not working out. You're like, I like to do other things besides workout, like yoga.
Well, no, yoga as a workout, I should say. Yoga, that counts for me as movement, for sure. That does.
Okay, I was like, most people would count that as a workout, but I'm glad.
No, I do. I do.
Okay, good. But yeah, I think that's actually really relatable. And I would love to hear more about how you got into podcasting. I know you started as a blogger. So
Yeah, my background is in publishing. My background is in journalism and print media, and that's what I went to college for. That's what I moved to New York City to do. So I was the editor-in-chief of Dance Spirit magazine, which is a teen dance magazine that I will forever love so very much, even though it's not in print anymore, and I'm very sad about that. So I've always loved telling stories. I've always loved asking a lot of questions. I've always been obnoxiously curious. I literally had an ex-boyfriend tell me that it was embarrassing going to parties with me because I didn't know how to just make polite small talk. I would like meet one of his friends for the first time and be like, what are your greatest hopes and dreams? Or like, do you have any regrets? And he's like, can you just ask him like about the weather? Like, this is so embarrassing. And I was like, no, like that does not interest me. I'm not wasting my time on frivolous conversation. And so I've certainly always had that curiosity, and I didn't know where that would take me. And so for a while it meant telling stories in the magazine. I love kids and I love teenagers, and getting to share their stories in Dance Spirit was so fun. Like, I will never forget interviewing this little tap dancer. He was, I think, like 7. And I don't know if you've ever interviewed a 7-year-old, but there's not a ton to work with, depending on the kid, of course. But I just remember all he wanted to talk to me about was hamburgers. Like, he did not want to talk about his tap career. He wanted to talk to me about hamburgers. And I was like, yeah, like, let's do it. Let's talk about hamburgers. And it's just fun. Like, I love learning about people. And so while I was at Dance Spirit, that is when I started running. And so I decided to start a running blog, which is kind of what everyone was doing at the time. I loved reading running blogs. It was very much, you know, 2010 was the running blog heyday. And that's when I got into it. But it was a hobby. There was no plan, goal, vision for it other than I'm going to write about my run today. I'm going to write 45 paragraphs about my run today. Like, I could use so many adjectives in those posts, and I did. So that was where Ally on the Run started, as a blog. And I updated it daily, sometimes twice a day. I don't know how I had the time or energy, but I did that. And then I left Dance Spirit in 2014. I spent just 8 short months working at a running store, helping them with their marketing and social media, which I very much knew was a transitional job for me. I just kind of like, I knew I needed to make a change. I didn't know what it was yet. And that opportunity was there. And so I did that for a little bit. And it was during that time that I realized I actually wanted to write about running professionally. And so I started freelancing. I went full-time freelance, wrote for kind of all the people, you know, right? Self, Shape, Women's Health, Well and Good, Runner's World, Women's Running, started writing for all of those publications. And then my husband and I got married, we got a dog, we moved out of New York City across the river to New Jersey. And that was when the Ally on the Run show was born, because all of my running friends were still in Central Park and I was now in New Jersey. And so the closest thing that I could find to running with friends was running with podcasts. And I just felt like I could do that. And I was just like, I'm going to try this. My freelance career was in a really good spot. I was doing really well, but just like with the blog, it was going to be my fun little side project that I would do. And that was February 2017 that the show launched. And now that is my full-time job. It has become something that I love so much and that I've been able to make a career out of. So that is the evolution of Ally on the Run and all the side things along the way.
I mean, that's amazing. And I think such a good model for people who want to make careers out of running and out of doing what they love. And just shows kind of your perseverance of continuing to go forth and do the work of telling people's stories. I'm an English teacher, and I always say to people that telling other stories is one of the best gifts you can give to the world.
Yeah, especially there are so many people, like, I can't even tell you how many people I reach out to come on the show. And they're like, why would you want to hear from me? Like, I don't have anything to say. And I'm like, everyone does. Everyone has a story. And I'm obsessed with hearing all those stories. And that's how, I mean, gosh, that's how we learn and grow. And there's so much power in those stories, and there's so much relatability in those stories. And yeah, I'm just obsessed with hearing from people. I love it.
Me too. No, I'm with you. And I guess on that note, we actually share somewhat of a similarity of a story. I have ulcerative colitis and was diagnosed when I was 10 years old. And Alex, that you have Crohn's disease and wrote about that on your blog. So I guess I'm curious, how have, and gosh, Crohn's disease is, I mean, I had my colon removed when I was 14, so I don't deal with it quite in the way as someone with Crohn's, where you're, you know, stuck in a chronic illness that you're always dealing with. The colitis has a bit of that out. So I guess I'd love to hear about how you've balanced that with your running and nutrition, because that's something that's always a big part of my life and figuring out how to be the best runner that I can. If you're willing to share, it's definitely not always the easiest topic.
Oh yeah, I'm an open book. We'll go there. So I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was 7. My actual technical diagnosis has since been upgraded to Crohn's colitis. I joke that I'm an overachiever and I have both. No. Why have one when you can have both? It's like getting an A+ in like digestive failure. I think that because I was diagnosed at such a young age, it's made it easier for me as an adult. I hear from a lot of women who've been diagnosed in their 20s and 30s, which is super common. And that's like, that rocks your world because you've lived your whole life and all of a sudden you have this diagnosis and you have to navigate it. And I was lucky to grow up and it was kind of my parents' problem, right? Like they were the ones dealing with the insurance companies. They were the ones making the doctor's appointments. Yes, I was sick, but like so much of this disease is the management of it. And that is finding the doctor and getting the prescription and getting it approved and dealing with the prior authorization. And like, that's the biggest stress of this disease for me. I joke that like, my doctor will be like, well, you know that stress is a trigger. And I'm like, well, you know that the insurance company is denying me the medication that you want me to have. And that is why I'm stressed. Like it's so cyclical in that way. And so
absolutely,
I'm used to it now, right? Like I have flares every so often. They're awful, but I know that they're temporary. I don't know how temporary. I've had flares that have lasted a week and I've had flares that have lasted 2 years pretty persistently. And so I say that is often the most challenging part of the disease is the uncertainty. Like you said, it's chronic. It can hit me at any time. There's no warning. There's no like slow build to a flare. It's just like one day it sucks. And so that's not fun, especially dealing with that in new motherhood. And as a mom is super hard because I've seen how my disease affects the people in my life. And the last thing I ever want to be is a burden to my loved ones. And so that's something that is on my mind. And I'm really good at like putting pressure on myself in any way possible. And I'm very good at worrying. So those are totally strengths of mine. But I've been on the same medication for a couple years now. I'm on Stelara, which is a shot that I give myself every 4 weeks. Or I guess the proper term is a subcutaneous injection that I give myself every 4 weeks. It mostly works. My baseline is still not what I think most people experience. Like I'm still going to the bathroom at least once every time I run, usually more than once. I tend not to want to do longer races because just knowing I'm going to have to make a bathroom stop during a race is a little bit daunting. But I've learned what works for me. And especially during the pandemic, which is my first time in my adult life not living in a city, because I lived in New York City and then in New Jersey for so long, that I'm learning the country life here in New Hampshire is really good for me as someone with Crohn's, because I run on trails and I have more access to public restrooms. Like there is not a lot of public restroom access, especially during the pandemic in New York City, or if you find one, the line is really long. And with Crohn's disease, that's not going to work for me. And so I've had a lot of practice with this disease. I've had a lot of time to figure it out. My nutrition when it comes to running is not what anyone would recommend. I do best on a very empty stomach. Unless I'm running more than a half marathon, I'm not putting anything in my body because I just know how it's going to go. So I also say like do what works for you, not what works for me. When people ask me like, oh, how do you fuel for your races when you have Crohn's? I'm like, I don't. Could I be faster if I experiment a little more? Probably. But I, both mentally and physically, I need an empty stomach. That's how I'm most comfortable. And so, yeah, a lot of experimenting, a lot of, you know, I've had a lot of embarrassing moments with this disease. I've had a lot of stuff that, like, I didn't want this to be my legacy. I didn't want to be the running blogger with Crohn's. Like, a huge portion of my audience is people with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis or IBS. And I'm like, I don't want to be the girl talking about poop, but also I wanted someone to be, and I had a really hard time finding that. And so every day, every message that I get from someone who's like, hey, I have Crohn's and that's how I found you, or hey, I have Crohn's and I can relate to you, like, that to me is like, okay, I can be the girl who talks about poop because I am not easily embarrassed. And if me talking about it helps someone else, then sure, let's do it.
Well, I can say I super appreciate that you are out there doing it. I also try to talk about it, but it is hard when you're finding that balance of it being a part of you, but not your identity. That's a really difficult balance to find. And oftentimes it can become too at the forefront in some ways when you're like, no, but I'm all these other things too. I'm not just this disease. So I appreciate you finding that balance, but also being willing to talk about it. And I wish you could have seen me just nodding along the whole time being like, yes, yes, I'm with you. But I think in some ways it is so much easier to be diagnosed when you're younger. Cause like, I also am not normal. I go to the bathroom way more than most people, but I don't know any differently. So exactly. If you don't know any differently, there's no normal precedent to go off of.
Yeah, my baseline is just like, I know that I need a lot of time in the bathroom before I can leave the house. I know that when I'm out, I'm planning everything about that outing. Where are the restrooms? Where is my escape route? Like, I never go somewhere without knowing, having a bathroom plan. I never go for a run without knowing, are there bathrooms? Are there woods? Are there, like, I always know. And also that makes me a really great running buddy because all runners like to know where the bathrooms are. And I always know. So, you know, we've got a leg up there.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. And I think it just, you know, everyone has their devils that they're coming at life. It may be poop for some of us, and it may be, you know, dehydration or anything like that. So I think we all come in with different challenges.
Or if you're postpartum like me and you're having a lack of poop and you're just sitting here jealous of all of your guys' issues.
Oh no. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was like, well, you know, there's all ends of that spectrum. And currently yeah. I'm a little jealous. No, I actually snorted. I had to text Alyssa. I snorted my coffee when you were talking about it because it was so funny. And I was like, oh, well, I'm now covered in baby vomit and coffee. So perfect. I can relate. And I, even though I have an iron stomach, and that's like my one strong suit when it comes to running, but I have this story I feel like I have to share with you because you need to know, because of the bathroom situation. I had an incident with curry when, oh gosh, I had curry in Thailand. I eat curry like at least 4 nights a week. I love curry. I thought it was the safest pre-marathon meal ever. And there's the Chiang Mai Marathon, which is a Boston qualifying marathon. So you would think that, you know, the restrooms and water stops are going to be, I don't know, where they say they are. And that was not the case. And I got to like mile 6 or 7 and I was in the most of urgent memory I've ever had of needing the restroom. So I can imagine kind of the panic that you guys have, because I've had this experience this once. And I was like, okay, there wasn't the bathroom at like, I think it said every 5K there was supposed to be something. I'm like, well, maybe I missed the 6 mile, you know, 10K bathroom. There's gotta be one. I'll wait. It can't be more than 10, you know, mile 10. It'll be like mile 9 point something. And I'm doing math in my head. I'm like, I can hold it. And I got there and there was nothing. Oh, and then no. I got to mile 10 and there was nothing. And I'm like, I'm asking people like, cause there's water stations, but there's no porta potties. And I'm like, is there bathroom? You know, and English isn't spoken very often, but people were getting what I was saying and nothing. And so finally the sun's up and I'm just like, I have to go. Like there's no holding this situation. And so I'm like pooping on the side of a canal in the front of someone's yard. There's literally nowhere I can hide. There's like marathoners going everywhere. It's like 7 a.m. The sun's up. And I'm just like, oh God, I hope this person does not look out their front window. And I'm so sorry because I'm literally pooping in their yard.
And did anyone acknowledge you? Like, did anyone say anything or look or wave?
I don't know. I just like looked down.
Head down.
Yep. I was like almost in tears. I was so embarrassed.
Yep.
And then like every 2 miles after that, but at least at that point I realized what was happening. So I could start looking for like a bush or a corner or something that could, it went from me thinking I was going to easily run a solid like Boston Claw and have a very comfy, fast race to like just surviving.
Just kidding.
So I do understand that panic. And I would not recommend that marathon for anyone with Crohn's or, any sort of bowel issues. So,
but here's what I'll say to that. And I so appreciate you sharing that because so many runners have that story. And every now and then I'll hear from a runner who's like, I don't have one. And I'm like, you will, like, give it time. And the thing is, like, people will say all the time, they'll be like, well, I don't have Crohn's, but like, I don't, you know, I can't understand what you go through, but, and honestly, what you just described, that's it. Like, granted, that's me like every day or almost every run and certainly every race. But that is it. Like my husband would so kill me for telling this story, but it's fine. When we lived in New Jersey, the way to get into New York, into the city, was to take the ferry. And the ferries, it's a short ride. It's an 18-minute ride, but there's no bathrooms. And so those ferries gave me all the anxiety in the world because there's nowhere to go and you're on a tiny boat with people. Like, you're screwed. And there was one day I forget if he called me or I think he texted me and he was like, oh my God, I think I know what you go through, because he was on the boat, trapped. Coffee kicked in. He had to go and had nowhere to go. I'm pretty sure he like made it to a Starbucks, or there's bathrooms at the ferry terminals. So I'm pretty positive he made it. But he was panicking. He's like, I was sweating. I was freaking out. I was picturing the worst case scenarios. And I'm like, yeah, like, I wouldn't say I'm glad that happened to you, but I'm glad that happened to you, because once you've experienced it, you know that sheer panic. Yeah. You start to sweat, you're freaking out. And so much of it is rooted in shame, right? Like, which I get. I wouldn't blame people if I was visibly having an accident in the middle of a boat. Yeah. People are going to look. Yeah. People are going to be like, that's gross. And what am I going to do? So, I mean, it's a very, it's a very unfortunate human thing. And I think that more people than we will ever know have experienced it. And thank you for sharing your poop story. We're all a little bit closer now.
Anytime. I wanted to be part of the crowd, since I can't currently poop. Maybe that'll encourage my bowels to do better.
Runners are also the best in that way. Every runner, like, runners are pretty cool talking about this stuff.
I always feel
like it's important, you know?
Yeah. I always say that. I'm like, when people are like, oh, this is too much information, I'm like, I am a runner, specifically a trail runner. There is nothing in my like bracket that you could floor me with. Like, yep. We've done everything.
I know people that I've been on a 4-hour trail run with better than people I went to 4 years of high school or college with.
Yeah, it's so true.
So that said, I guess I have a question, because you have gotten some of my like dream podcast guests on, and I do love your podcast. I'm a bit of a fangirl, I'll admit it. So that said, what are some things that you've, and I know this is going to be like, you can't do all encompassing, but what are some things that you've learned or taken away from the guests that you've had? And it doesn't have to be like the famous runner. It could be, you know, just things that have stuck out to you. So I think Alyssa and I always talk about Jonathan Levitt from For the Long Run podcast. One of the things he said that we love and we've used a lot since is, running can't be therapy. Therapy is therapy. And that's like become one of my favorite things to discuss with people. And so like, there, you doesn't have to be, you know, the most famous person, I guess, but just things that have stuck with you.
Yeah, I love the therapy one. I had a great therapy session yesterday. And I mean, an actual therapy session, not a great run, a great hour spent with my therapist. So the biggest thing, and I just talked about this on John's show, the biggest thing that comes to mind is control the controllables. The pros talk about it all the time, that on race day, they can't control their competitors. They can't control the tactics. They can try to control the pace, but ultimately they can only do their training. They can only run their race. And man, if that doesn't apply to so many parts of life, and where I've used it the most is in motherhood and in parenting. And I can't control a newborn. I can't totally control a toddler, but I can control how I react to things. I can control what I show her, what I model for her. I can't control how everyone else is parenting, but I can do what I think is best in my home. And so I come back to that a lot. I just remember a long stretch of all the pros saying like, no, I can only control me. Like, no, I can't control my competitors. And I come back to that a lot. It's really helpful when you think about things like the comparison trap. And again, that can come into play in all areas of our lives. And so control the controllables.
It's fantastic advice. It's especially right now, I think, great advice for everyone in the world.
Yes. Yeah. Well, honestly, during the pandemic, that was huge for me because I was having such early pandemic rage of like when this first started a year ago and people were still going out and people were packing into bars when like we were in the early weeks, like there were refrigerator trucks filled with bodies on every block in New York City. And like people didn't care. And oh my God, I got such rage. Like I was just, it put me in a really bad headspace. And I had to finally say, like, I cannot control how other people are going to act during this pandemic. I cannot waste my energy on that. That is very unproductive. I can only control how I and my family act during this time. And that's it. And it, oh my gosh, it was like such a switch that flipped as soon as I realized I could not force people to wear masks. I could not force people not to travel. I could not force people to just stay the hell home, but we could stay home and we could make sure that we were safe and our loved ones were safe. And that's really all we could do.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We, unfortunately with Zoom, we only have about 6 minutes left. Darn you, Zoom. So what are you currently training for? What are your kind
nothing.
Of big, nothing? Okay.
Nothing. I know. So see, I can answer That's it awesome. So quickly. So I am a race announcer. I started race announcing in 2019 with New York Roadrunners, and I'm now announcing the low risk races that Millennium Running is putting on here in New Hampshire. And I've started announcing with them. So announcing is my favorite way to experience race day. I've found that I actually don't miss running. There are certain times that I'm like, oh, I kind of wish I were out there, but being a race announcer at the start and at the finish, it's so fun. I prefer the start to the finish. Most people think, well, depends on the race. So maybe I shouldn't say that. I prefer the finish at the New York City Marathon. But at most of these races, the start, like everyone is a bundle of nerves. There's that nervous energy and like, we get to see that and see those first moments when they start running and who knows how that day is going to play out. It's just filled with so much, the unknown and potential. And so I myself am not training for anything. I had one running goal this year. I wanted to try and run a sub-6 minute mile outside. I had done it on a treadmill at Orange Theory last year and wanted to try my personal best mile time outside was a 6:10. So I was like, I think I can do it. And how lucky was I that there was a 1 mile races are not easy to come by. There's not that many, especially during a pandemic, but Millennium Running put on, it's called the Millennium Mile, on New Year's Day. So on January 1st, I lined up, I ran 5:54.9 and I was like, sweet, I'm done. Like I achieved my running goal on January 1st, so I can just chill now. So yeah, not training for anything, which is honestly kind of how I prefer to run these days. Of it's just a fun thing where I can run however far or fast on any given day. And that's enough.
I love that the podcast we released this morning is actually with my husband, which was, I know this sounds weird, it was probably the podcast I've been most nervous for. Aww. Because I wanted to share him as a person that I see him as. And I think I really wanted to make sure the questions we asked kind of shared the side of him, I think, that a lot of people don't know. And so that's really his relationship with running too, is it's all about personal journey and enjoyment and no, really, like, he's really good and talented and can go win a race, but that's not at all his interest. And I think that's one of the healthiest relationships with running that people can have. So I love that you kind of share that. That said, I guess probably our last like serious question, if we can, we'll try to squeeze, you know, something silly in, but how has motherhood, since again, I'm selfish and I want to pick your brain about things that are relevant to me. So how has motherhood changed your relationship with running? Has it made you more serious, less serious, more laid back, more, you know, what has it done for you?
More laid back for sure. Stronger for sure. It's true what they say. Obviously everyone's different, but yeah, I used to like definitely waste a lot of time on the runs. I would stop a lot, check Instagram a lot. Now I'm like, okay, nap time could be 40 minutes or 3 hours. So I'm getting this run in and I'm making it count. And so certainly more focused in that way, but generally speaking, the biggest thing is I love myself now, which sounds a little like grim, but I had a pretty tumultuous relationship with my body for a very long time. And it took me being pregnant, which I thought going into that, I was like, I'm going to hate this. I'm going to hate being pregnant. I'm going to hate what it's going to do to my body. And I was so lucky to be pregnant. And I acknowledged that every day. And I really enjoyed my pregnancy, which again, I know how lucky I am to be able to say that. And it's not something I have taken for granted for even a second. And pregnancy, and I never thought I would be the woman who's like, I saw how strong my body could be. Cause I, you know, I don't know, that just didn't used to resonate with me. And now I'm like, yeah, no, like my body's awesome. And I'm like, I love myself now. Like I love my body and I feel strong and I want to model exercise as a thing that is fun and that we get to do and not a punishment. I want my daughter to see that and to know that.
I love that so much. And it's something I don't have right now, hopefully in the future, but I hope to also be that role model and appreciate you setting that example for future moms as well. So we are just about out of time, but thank you so much, Allie, for coming on and sharing your insights, your poop jokes and stories and all of that. It's really appreciated. So if people want to follow you or find you, where best can they do that?
Yeah. Allie on the Run Show on all major podcast players. And I am Allie on the Run 1 on Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And we really look forward to catching up with you in the future.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.